You are Locked On the NFL, your daily NFL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Well, hello. I am Matt Williamson. This is the Locked On NFL Podcast, one of my favorite shows of the week. Old buddy Mike Sando stops by, and there's much to discuss. Mike, first off, how are you?
Doing well. How about you, Matt?
I'm great. I can't complain at all. I mean, in the swing of things, I got about a week under my belt of Clayton football. That's going really well. Good game tonight, and I wanted to start there, if that's okay with you. Giants, yeah. Eagles. And there's a couple things I want to talk about these teams before we dig in. Is a colleague of yours wrote a good story about the state of Eli Manning, more or less. And I've been kind of saying that this is a declining player at the end of his road. The whole Odell thing came out. And I really think they're a very strong candidate to pick early in the draft and bring in a youngster next year.
No doubt about it. I mean, I think, you know, beyond just the numbers, I mean, he doesn't look that thrilled about standing in there and playing football. I haven't thought the last couple of years. So we can discuss why that is, the line's bad, whatever. But bottom line is, a lot of teams deal with, you know, quarterbacks deal with lines and look better than Eli's looked. So he doesn't have the support around him that he had up defensively, I think, in the past. Their special teams are not good. So their margin for error, now you're losing that game against Carolina that might have been a win in the past. If they're 2-3, maybe people are patient. But they're 1-4. They're not. To me, the test, Matt, the Eagle game is, I mean, it is what it is. It's a Thursday night game, and it could be, it may not be pretty, but their next four opponents, okay, if you look at the Giants' schedule, after that, we got Falcons, Redskins, 49ers, and Bucks, okay? Those four teams have allowed 44 touchdown passes with 9 interceptions so far. They've allowed 5,000 passing yards, 106 passer rating, 67 QBR. If Eli looks bad against those teams with the weapons that he has, then you have your full confirmation. If he gets hot and has a nice month, it doesn't mean you're not drafting a quarterback next year, but maybe you have a little more optimism for the season.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of people are real critical. How could you possibly take Barkley when there was quarterbacks to be had? You're going to regret that. But I kind of said all along that, well, it's an aggressive move. It may be not a move I would have made. But if the season doesn't go well, it doesn't mean you can't draft a quarterback a year, you know, 2019 draft.
Yeah, I think the fear was that you'd be just good enough to not get that guy, you know. And look at them this year. They're a 1-14. They're not going to be a 1-15. If Eli plays the whole year, maybe they win 5 games. Does that get you in position to where you were last year when you could have taken them? Now, maybe you didn't like the ones last year, but
right, that was the next thing.
And if you didn't, then you shouldn't take one you don't think is going to be good, because there's been plenty of quarterbacks drafted early when you needed one, and you won the post-draft press conference. You know, we got name failed quarterback right in the top of the draft. We got our guy, and then everybody's pats you on the back. Oh, these guys really took care of their quarterback position. So time will tell, but I do think that there's at least enough optimism coming into the draft with the quarterbacks this last year, and even now, some of the guys looking pretty good that, you know, maybe you did miss an opportunity.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, maybe that's definitely a possibility. But I also think that Barkley doesn't look so bad, you know, and I don't think the Cowboys are unhappy about taking Elliott early or the Rams taking Gurley or McCaffrey, you know, like, I think the whole running back narrative has changed for guys that can do as much as Barkley can.
Yeah, people have always said, oh, recently the value of the running backs way down. And I said, well, unless he's just the absolute elite running back, then you pay him a ton of money and he positively affects your offense. If Barkley's that type of player and it can't have a positive effect on Eli, then, you know, it tells you what you need to know.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of running backs, we got Giants-Eagles tonight. I want to talk about that game specifically a little bit. But rumors are swirling around the Eagles. You know, that Jay Ajayi goes down. They immediately restructure Fletcher Cox to open up some cap space and You would think there's a reason behind that. The logical move would be to go get a running back. Is that going to be Shady McCoy? There's been some Le'Veon Bell speculation. I bet they could get Carlos Hyde if they so wanted. Do you think something like that's in the works, and might the trade like that even happen tomorrow?
Yeah, I don't know that that move was for that. I believe that move was the move to restructure immediately after they learned about Jay Ajayi, or was it in the works before?
I don't know.
It was in the works before, but bottom line is they're definitely a team that could be a candidate for a running back. I don't know if I think the Browns really like Carlos Hyde. I don't know what would be going on with him, but LeSean McCoy, I mean, the Bills have been willing to trade anybody who's good team. And, you know, and they've got their reasons for doing that, but you would think that there's somebody who's been in Philly in the past, you know, that would make some sense, may make more sense than even Le'Veon Bell. And then you ask, what is the price? I don't think the price is high at this point in the season.
Fourth rounder?
Give up a ton. Yeah. That could be what it is. You know, it's just not you're only getting part of a season for a guy, certainly in Le'Veon Bell's case, who doesn't even have a contract and wants to be paid off the charts type of money. At least with LeSean McCoy, he is signed through the 2019 season, his age 31 season. You could make a decision on him because he would not be in the guaranteed portion of his contract. You could move on from him after this year.
Yeah, and I know it might not be that big a factor, but he grew up in Harrisburg, played for the team before. I doubt he would complain to leave Buffalo at this point.
Yeah, I don't think so at all. You know, and really, Le'Veon Bell would make some sense too. If you could get Bell for not a great pick, then you can let him leave and get a comp pick and get your money back, basically.
Yeah,
that may also be what the Steelers are going to do.
Yeah, and I've talked about Bell all week, so I'm not going to harp on it. But I think the price of obtaining Bell from the Steelers has kind of gone up. You know, they just won. I think they look at their season like not all is lost. Is it worth us to just get a third-round pick for a guy that might win a Super Bowl for it? I mean, he's useful. I mean, yeah. Those 10 games of Le'Veon Bell are valuable for the Steelers.
Yep. Yeah, especially for them, their margin for error is smaller. You know, we've seen defensively, you know, that I believe they're up 10 points per game from weeks 1 to 13 last season, which was the weeks they had Shazier on their defense.
Yeah, yeah.
All because of him, but through those first 13 weeks last year, they were allowing 17 points per game and change, and it's at 27 since then. They have the playoffs, so you know they can't just be getting rid of players freely. I think they need as many good players as they can get in a competitive, you know, AFC where New England's always going to be tough, and now Kansas City's in the mix, and then, you know, Jacksonville came in and beat you guys twice last year in Pittsburgh. So yeah, just subtracting maybe one of the three best players from your team would hurt.
Yeah, I agree. And as for tonight's game, I wrote this one up for Clayton Football. I urge everyone to check it out. It's got a real fantasy spin to it, but it also gets into X's and O's. And I'm really expecting a shootout, which I hesitate to always call for on a Thursday night on a short week division game. But I think Wentz is back to playing really well. I think the Giants rush the passer extremely poorly, and the Eagles O-line has a massive advantage there. I think Ertz is kind of an unstoppable force right now, and Aguilar and Jeffrey, I mean, they don't have great matchups, but I think that without pass rush, Wentz is going to carve these guys up. And then I look at the other side, and I would really worry about Fletcher Cox and the pass rush and Eli crumbling under pressure. But the Eagles' corners, to me, are very problematic. And I think Shepard and Odell both have big games. I have the Eagles winning like 35-27, something like that. A lot of points, fun game. But I think the Eagles are ready to assert themselves in that division.
Well, that will certainly be a break for them. Even though Wentz, I think, has looked pretty good, they have not exceeded 23 points in a game this season. When they did get 23 points, they lost to the Titans somehow. I'm not sure. I'm still not 100% sure how they lost that game. That would be a very welcome sight, I think, for Eagles fans at this point. In what, from their standpoint, kind of a must-win game at home. It sort of feels must-winish for both teams. It feels like the Giants are 1-4, man, you just can't keep digging a hole. But you get the defending Super Bowl champs with a home, or I guess they're at the Giants, but the game at the Giants, great. They are thinking, if you're an Eagles fan, you're thinking, this is one we can win.
Right.
And this is one we can win. So for them to fall to 2-4 would be a little rough.
If you were to power rank that division, how would you do it? To me, I still would say the Eagles 1, the Giants 4, and I don't know, between 2 and 3.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and I would. I might go with Washington as 2.
Mm-hmm.
Washington has not been in a game to set about fewer than 10 points this year. They're 2-2, and they're either winning by a lot or losing by a lot. So you sort of have a week-to-week feel on them. I think they walked into a buzzsaw, frankly, with the Saint game. Yeah. You know, it was a coronation. It was a ceremony for Drew Brees.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, they were just sort of spectators. They might as well have been sitting in the stands. So this week will tell us a little more. They play, I think, a pretty resourceful, tough Carolina team, but they're at home. It would be a great win for them. I think we put the Eagles at the top just sort of based on what we think is going to happen more than what has happened. So, you know, with Wentz back, I would think they would get – they have the team that I would feel the best chance about in the division for getting better in the future.
I 100% agree. I mean, I think they may have weathered a tough storm, the Foles time and all that, and they are the champs. But I'm not sure if they've played the best football. So, guys, I want to tell everybody about Blue Chew. Blue Chew has been a sponsor here before. They took a little break, but they are back in a big way. And this is how I look at Blue Chew, that if you're the Eagles and you're having problems at corner, you're going to go be aggressive and fix that problem, right? I mean, if you're the Giants and your quarterback, a very important thing on the makeup of a team isn't adequate, well, you go get another quarterback. So what do you do if you're struggling in the bedroom, Mike? You got to fix it, right? You can't just be happy with that. You go to BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. BlueChew.com brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. So you know they work. And to be very honest, my shipment just arrived. I have not tried one yet, but it's sitting here right next to me. I opened it yesterday. Very thankful to the Blue Chew people. I appreciate the product. I will, I guess, give it a shot at some point here because I told you I would. But if something's wrong, you got to fix it, right? So you can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up twice as fast as a pill. Pill never quite understood. You know, like, hey, how about a half hour from now, babe? We'll meet up in the bedroom. As opposed to Blue Chew, it's so much faster and easier. It's prescribed online and shipped right to your door in a discreet package. So no in-person doctor visits, no waiting at the pharmacy, and best of all, no awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special offer for our listeners. Go to BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code, CODE, C-O-D-E is our promo code, all caps. Just pay the $5 in shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code, CODE, to try it free. Blue Chew is the faster, cheaper, better choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast, and I thank you very much for the free samples as well. Give them a shot at some point here, I suppose. All right, Mike, change the tune here a little bit. Something I've been asking everyone all week, because it was asked of me on Monday and I didn't quite know how to answer it. If you were to power rank the AFC North, how would you do that?
Wow.
That's how everybody responds.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I would do Baltimore number one right now.
Okay.
I think they've kind of played the best ball. I know they lost a game against Cleveland where they really should have probably won, had many opportunities to win. But I have felt like they have been sort of the sounder, you know, sort of the sounder team in all three phases.
The least weaknesses?
Yeah. And then I think it's pretty close between Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. And then it's not as far down to Cleveland as it used to be. Maybe this week's game, Cincinnati and Pittsburgh, will tell us whether Cincinnati deserves to be that second team. You know, I'm sort of withholding judgment on them. I'm optimistic for them, but we've seen this before, and they've lost so many games in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's really owned them.
Yeah.
They have not, they don't score points against Pittsburgh. So to me, this matchup this week tells us whether something's different, because Pittsburgh can be scored upon. And if they can't do it, I'm just looking at it right here, got my numbers. So they are, the Steelers are 22-8 against the Bengals during the Marvin Lewis era. They have held the Bengals to 21 or fewer points in 17 consecutive games between the teams. Think of that.
It's amazing,
13-4 in those. That is in my weekly insider picks. If you're an E-plus subscriber on ESPN.com, you can see that and a bunch of other stuff and thoughts from league execs and coaches on the big games. But to me, the way these two teams are configured, if this is another 20-17 or 24-17 Pittsburgh win, then maybe nothing's changed. But I kind of feel like maybe something has changed, and it's in Cincinnati. So I could see making Cincinnati the second team, and maybe this game tells us if that's true.
See, I think they're number one in terms of who's the best team in the division this second, and I very well could change my opinion on Monday. And I've talked, you know, we've talked to a lot of Bengals people all week, and you know, you hear these kind of things before, but they've said things like, it feels different this year because instead of crumbling late in games, the Bengals have found ways to win, and they seem like a more mentally tough team, and Dalton really has a handle on these type of things, and I can see that. You know, I mean, they get a bad reputation of, boy, they take, you know, they take all the criminals, and I think that gets vastly overblown, and they're a team that I don't see massive holes with either.
No, they're actually a really good team, and mm-hmm. you know, they beat the Ravens, so if they get the Ravens and the Steelers, you know, in the first 6 weeks of the season, granted the game, the Raven game was in Cincinnati, and I mm-hmm. believe, and this game's in Cincinnati too, but you could certainly make that case. I think, you know, with them, they've been good before, they have a good roster, it seems like attrition gets the best of them, you know, and late in the year, they don't have a lot of their top stars, so they've already lost Tyler Eifert. Joe Mixon's been in and out of the lineup.
John Ross is in and out of the lineup.
Yeah, you're down 17. I know they won the Miami game, but you're down 17-0. You know, so I would like. I guess, you know, maybe if we remove from our memories anything that happened before this season and just focus only on this season, you know, you probably would put Cincinnati number one.
Right. That's hard to do.
It's hard to do when you sort of know how the story ends a lot of the time, and you know what the history is, and you know they've had an injury or two. But they're pretty good team.
They are. And on Sunday, as it always is the case, there's going to be a lot of black and gold in the Bengals stadium, and the Steelers have really had their number. So I probably will take Pittsburgh, although I think the Bengals have clearly been the better team of the two up till now. And maybe I'm optimistic because it's my hometown, but I think Pittsburgh has turned a little bit of a corner. And if they can get this win before their bye, I feel like they're back.
Really? You feel like they're back defensively?
No, I think they're good enough. But
okay.
I mean, yeah. They rush the passer well. They can control the line of scrimmage. And I think they'll allow big plays. I mean, they have the most sacks in the league. They had the most sacks in the league last year. I think that's enough if the offense is humming.
Yeah. After the first game, I said, hey, T.J. Watt's going to lead the family in sacks this year. And then he scared me for a while. And I think even J.J. passed him. And then now they're tied. I think he got another 3-sack game. So there he is. So they certainly hope that's the case. I don't know that I'm quite there yet, ready to say it. But, you know, one thing I looked at in my preview column, too, was I think most people feel, and it's justifiably so, that Ben Roethlisberger hasn't been consistent enough. But just look at what he was, where he was at last season. You know, and I know
similar.
It was that Jacksonville game. But he was, at this point last season, he had more interceptions than touchdowns. I think his QBR was in the low 50s, so he's been better than that this season. I think we're just looking for an even higher level from him as other areas in the team, you know, need to be lifted up. The defense isn't dominant. You know, you don't have Le'Veon Bell, so there's sort of a sense that, hey, you're a tier one guy, then then be perfect, be close to perfect. He hasn't been that. Maybe he can still be that. I'm not quite ready to say they're back, but let's watch this week. They go into Cincinnati and do what they always do to Cincinnati. You might be right.
Yeah, and Ben's numbers throughout his career, which obviously a long career, are way worse in September than they are any other month. So it's not, you know, like you said, last year was really defined. This year's like that. At some point, that's going to dry up, but it's pretty, you know, pretty much a trend that I believe in. Mike Renner yesterday mentioned that the Browns should be in the conversation as the top team in the division for one simple reason, because Baker Mayfield is for real, and where would they have been those first couple games if Mayfield had played since day one? And he thinks they might be playing as well as any team in the division right now.
Well, they've collected 15 turnovers from their opponents through the first five games. Okay, that is tied for the most of any team, I believe, starting with that Seahawks 2013 Super Bowl team. It's like tied with that team. Now, the problem is, even though they are way up there in turnovers and have a really good positive turnover differential, they actually have a negative points off turnover margin. Their offense isn't converting that enough. So what happens to their team when they're no longer getting three turnovers per game? I mean, do we think that's going to be their pace sustainable for the whole year? You know, that's unlikely. So while I agree there's promise offensively, I don't think that they have been consistently efficient enough converting those points. Every game's an overtime thriller, and that's great. They've made progress. I'm not sure the turnover thing's going to be sustainable. I'm not sure the quarterback, while I think the glass is half full, I mean, really over the course of a full year, he's going to have his ups and downs. So I'm not quite willing to say that. I wasn't necessarily one of those teams, one of those guys before the year who thought they were going to win 9 games. But I do think that they've obviously made a big jump from last year, and we'll just see what happens when the turnovers maybe aren't as much in their favor.
Yeah, well said. And another there's a lot of big games this weekend, but one that's kind of under the radar that I think has serious playoff implications when it matters most is sticking in the division. The Ravens go to the Titans. And I haven't broke it down at all. I just want to kind of throw it out there. If you had any short thoughts on it, could be a very physical game. I have a hard time. Mariota still is not 100%, but you know, it's in Tennessee. I don't have a great feel for this one yet.
Well, if I'm going in it as a Titans fan, I'm thinking, please don't let Marcus Mariota get hurt worse. You know, it just feels like one of those games where you're playing Baltimore, and you know, to Tennessee's credit, they've been a slugfest type team too. And they've won. They swept Jacksonville last year, and they beat them 9-6 this year. You know, in a 19-52 type matchup, right? The Titans have not shown any of the sharpness in the passing game that has been there probably more often than not for Baltimore this season. So to me, I have Baltimore above them. I think Baltimore is a better team. Curious to see if Tennessee can pull one out, but also just worried about their quarterback health situation. I don't think that Marcus Mariota is fully healthy by any means. And this isn't the type of game you want to play to get healthy if you're Marcus Mariota. So I'm looking to see, does he finish the game? How does he look? Those types of things.
Yeah, I think these are two tier two defenses in the league. It'll be really interesting. I'm going to be focused on that game, and I'm going to do some more homework in the next 2 days to really look at matchups and things. We're going to take a super quick break, and then I want to talk about the game of the week quickly just to get some overview. We will be back in a moment. All right, Mike. KC travels to New England on Sunday night. That's the talk of the town. I'm going to write this game up. That's going to be my project for today, so it's more ahead of me than behind me. I haven't done the homework that I want. But I got to think Belichick makes Mahomes' life a little difficult. Maybe rushes three a high percentage of the time, floods his zones with eight guys, as they're known to do, a lot of man coverage, robber coverages, you know, things he hasn't seen, especially in the red zone, if they can hold the Chiefs to field goals, and the Pats are really adept at doing that over the years. But then I look at the other side. I know everyone's talking about probably when Mahomes has the ball, but I look at the other side and think, KC's no match for these guys. I mean, I mentioned that I think Pittsburgh might be back. I'm sure the Pats are back, especially on offense. The middle of the field is just so soft and squishy for the Chiefs. Gronk and Edelman and White. I think they're just going to pick them apart to death with short passing and long drives.
Yeah, I think that it'll be interesting to see how New England chooses to play the game, because they could just smash mouth it, try to shorten the game, and they could win the game 24-17, right? I mean, that we're all expecting it to be 45-43. So I think they do have options in how they're going to play the game. What's interesting, though, is a couple things. One, you know, Belichick has the extra time for this game. They haven't played since the Thursday Nighters, so you know that they've put in the time, and this is an interesting one. They've also prepared for this type of offense in the Super Bowl. They played Andy Reid last year. But if you look at the two highest yardage totals against the Belichick era Patriots, and these are the two highest yardage totals against the Patriots since the 1986 season.
One has to be the Super Bowl, right?
It's 538 yards by Philly, Doug Peterson, Andy Reid clone, in the Super Bowl. And it's 537 to the Chiefs in week one last year. So there's something there. You know, there's something there with, you know, those were two games where the Kansas City-type team had extra time to prepare. And maybe it's just the matchup. So what does Bill Belichick have that's different this time that helps him limit the damage? And I'm not 100% sure what that is. I mean, I mean, Mahomes is a young quarterback who I think over the last couple of weeks hasn't been just throwing six touchdown passes a game. So there's a natural probably regression anyway. But if they come out and have 539 yards, which would now be the new high, they really are onto something against the Belichick defenses.
Yeah, I didn't realize that, but I think that's hard to ignore, especially because they're very recent history. It's not like, well, 10 years ago they had a bad game against Andy Reid. You know, that's recent history with very similar styles of offense. And I'm with you. You look at the Pats D, what's better all of a sudden than, you know, week one of 2017 or the Super Bowl? Not much.
No, I don't think so either. So they often take, you know, it'll take them time sometimes to figure out how they're going to be defensively. And so sometimes early in the year, you know, they've looked horrible. Last year they were horrible on defense, but I think they've been better this year. But it's a difficult matchup. It's a difficult matchup for just about anybody. I think one thing that's got lost in the Chiefs putting up the 30 on Jacksonville is that all the interceptions and turnovers by Bortles. I mean, it's right. Any other defense would have lost 50-7. You know what I mean? So, it was the first game, I believe, Mahomes didn't have a touchdown pass, threw a couple picks. So I'm very anxious to see, does he just bounce back to the way it was the first few games of the season? Has three touchdowns, no interceptions. That would be the type of game that the Andy Reid, Doug Peterson offense has had against Belichick. So great matchup. Can't wait for this one. Really, really one of the best of the year.
Yeah, for sure. And if Mahomes lights it up on a national stage and is completing lefty passes and unbelievable throws and puts up 500 yards in a victory in New England, his stock is going to explode. I mean, like, be the highest in the world, and people will be going crazy over this guy. And I get it. For just to pull back the curtain, we're a little fuzzier today on the audio because Mike is traveling, so I'm going to let him go. We'll get back on next Thursday. Do you have any other nuggets, or that's going to let you go and be on your way?
All righty. Sounds good, Matt. We'll do it again next week.
Absolutely, bud. This was fun. We'll talk to you soon.